This morning's scripture reading will be from Romans chapter 8, verse 6. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace.
Thank you, Tyler. I'm probably not real good at it, but something I feel is an important part in my life, and I want for my family, and I want for you. I mention my family because I feel more responsible. Even more responsible for my family than I do for you as a congregation. Not that I don't love you. It's just that I feel a greater responsibility towards my family because they had to put up with me growing up. And grandkids are still putting up with me. I want us all to be saved, obviously. But I feel a greater, they had to tolerate me, and you learn a lot from a parent that you can't get away from. And so I prayed for a long time. I've mentioned this before, that almost every prayer I pray for my family to be spiritually minded. It's not hard to be physically minded or carnally minded. We're reminded of that all the time. Carnal has a more of a negative connotation to it. I mean, physically minded is part of carnally minded, but carnally minded is usually involving sin. Where physically minded, we can be very physically minded at times and not be sinful. Like, when I get hungry, my body's telling me, I get a hunger pain or something. My body's telling me I need to eat. There's nothing wrong with some of our physical pains, but it seems like, the body takes care of itself, or it gives us message, or, I need to blink my eye to get more tears or something. I've got something in it. There's just things the body does that kind of takes care of itself. I was with a doctor recently that was examining Mom, and he was talking about, things that hurt are rarely cancer. Cancer has a negative connotation. It sneaks up on you. It doesn't give you pain usually. It may cause pain later on down the road, but initially cancer sneaks up on you and snuffs your life out slowly. It can be hard to diagnose, but so that node, or what they thought maybe was a lymph node, was really a salivary gland probably. And it was painful, so it was giving her discomfort. But, her body was telling her something was wrong, and that's why cancer is dangerous, is because it sneaks up on you. Body, it does a pretty good job of taking care of itself or telling us its needs. But my prayer is that we don't overindulge on the physical side, that we don't get into the sinful areas of indulging the body. So I pray for my family, and I pray for you, that you are spiritually minded, that you go about your life. And examples of this were, it allows me to ramble a little bit this morning when I ask that we be spiritually minded. I talk about more than one subject. Something that just came to mind yesterday, I was leaning against a horse tent, and it was a pole that was holding some of the supports that held this tent up. And who do I think of? I think of Samson, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about Samson later. I'm leaning pretty hard on that. I had a pretty good day. I wasn't terribly worn out, but it just felt really good to lean against something, take some of the weight off. And so I did that. And so that's kind of what I think about as being spiritually minded. When something in my physical life I'm thinking about, get a spiritual application from it. I had experience, I don't know how long ago it was, kids, but 5 grandchildren in 1 bedroom, trying to get them to sleep was insane. So Friday night, I had 5 grandchildren, And my solution was send two of them home, because the next day three of us were going, the other three were going to the state fair, and I didn't want sleepy, grumpy kids. And Nikki and Maddie just instantly left. I mean, I don't think they were hurt. They knew what I had in mind, that they couldn't, you know, they enjoy each other's company so much that they just can't be quiet. Somebody's going to keep something going. And so I was amazed how quickly and how quietly they just left. And not like they were hurt, because they knew it was, I know Maddie knew it was coming, because I gave her a little bit of heads up on it. But it's not that I don't love them, but I also love these other three kids too, and I wanted them to have a good day at the fair. And so we did pretty good with three. But I thought, the spiritual application of this, how did parents years ago raise 8-12 kids in a 2 or 3 bedroom home? I thought, well, it's probably discipline. Spiritual aspect of that physical application was, it's probably they had discipline. And it took a little bit of that with me to at least think of sending two of them home. But, you know, grandparents, you know, being a grandparent, aren't you glad kids have parents? Something that came to me and kind of led me in this direction was, you know, I had surgery, and we show in the county fair, and we had four steers to break to lead. And the kids are getting older, kids are getting stronger, and that really helped out. But I'd had surgery, and I was a little leery of being around 1,000 to 1,200-pound steers trying to get them to lead when they were, you know, sometimes can be a little rambunctious. We've got a pretty good system that worked for us, but, I mean, we were taking a big chance, probably. It was July 4th, and we'd never had a halter on these four steers. And the county fairs, it was what, about the 23rd or 22nd of July, and these steers had never had a halter on them. And the only thing that was giving me any comfort was, I remember one year when the kids were younger, they went to Eminence, and the week of Eminence is usually always you know, around July 4th. And I remember that was the week that I first tried something to try to tame them down, and I had halters on them. And so I guess I had faith that we could do it. But about the second day, I think it was, that was July 5th, we put the halters on it. And, all we did was tie them up. That'd be July 5th. And July 6th, I think we did the same thing. We didn't try to do anything, didn't try to lead them. But we put the halters on them for 2 days in a row and left them in there all day without anything to eat or drink. They had something to eat and drink in the morning, something at night, but during all day they were tied up. They had to be restrained by that halter. And this halter has a chain underneath it that can be a little uncomfortable for an animal. It's basically, we call it a teaching an animal how to lead halter. Give it respect for that lead rope. And so we trained these four steers. Not, I'd say, good enough to win any fitting and showing classes, but I mean, you know, if you've been around county fairs and even state fairs, they have ring people or helpers in there that you get a stalled animal, they'll come up and twist a tail or pat them on the butt and get them to move again. Well, these four steers did amazingly well, and we even had one, I think it was the night before we did any of this, we never even had a halter on it, that jumped clear out of the pen, jumped over the fence. It was kind of a low fence. It was Maddie's animal, and it was kind of a mix-up at weigh-in that she got that animal other than Nikki, because I thought he's kind of genetically probably more prone to be a little more active. Well, and we were going, it was cold, and they were wet, and I didn't recognize the difference between one animal and another animal, and Maddie got the animal that I was thinking Nikki could probably be better for. But this animal, even though it jumped out and had a lot of nerves at times, performed pretty well in the show ring. But I guess the point why I tell you all this is, we spent such a short time with these animals because we hate to get attached, especially, we spent more time with the heifers. We started earlier with them, but we hate to get attached to the steers because, we know what's happening to these steers. God gave us animals. We've been studying Genesis on Wednesday night. God gave us animals, and they're for our, Mike kind of said on Wednesday night, they're for our use. We're to use them maybe wisely, but animals and the elements are to be used by man, hopefully, that we'll turn around and serve God with what we know and what we have and what we use here upon this earth. But these animals, they can, in such a short time, they can almost become pets, even in less than, I'd say, about 3 weeks. They had really tamed down and were really, they'd nudge you and they were, they'd even butt you a little bit, not out of hatred, but they just want something to rub on. And so you get kind of close to them. But it's not that aspect of it, but in Judges, we know the story of Samson, and we know what the Philistines have been putting up with from Samson, and it's God's plan. But Samson, we were comparing him to a little bit to Hosea this morning in our class, but there's big differences in Samson and Hosea too. Just read the first three verses of chapter 16 in Judges. Then Samson went to Gaza and saw a harlot there and went into her. When the Gazites were told, "Samson, come here," they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. They were quiet all night, saying, "In the morning, when it is daylight, we will kill him." And Samson lay low till midnight. Then he arose at midnight, took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two gateposts, pulled him up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. So they were, had a great hatred for Samson because of his great strength and what he had done to the Philistines. But it happened, he had this problem with women. And somewhat different than maybe Hosea's situation, but down in the 21st verse, it says, "Then the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza. They bound him with bronze fetters, and he became a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaven. Now the Lord of the Philistines gathered together to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they said, 'Our God has delivered into our hands Samson, our enemy.' When the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, 'Our God has delivered into our hands our enemy, the destroyer of our land, and the one who multiplied our dead.'" I wanted to read the portion. I'm not sure this exactly is a good comparison, but being spiritually minded, you can even think of things that aren't exact ideals. But I thought of leading these calves around, knowing what was going to happen to them, made me not feel guilty, but a little sadder than maybe I'd like to. But I thought of Samson, how he was probably led about, being blind and not having his strength to get away. Now these animals that we lead around could, if they only knew it, we're dominating them. And that's what I tell the kids, you've got to dominate that animal. We've given them that chain underneath to think they can't get away, and it's your job to basically not ever let them know they can get away, because you are dominating that animal with a lead rope. And it won't be that same chain when you show them. But I thought about Samson and how he might have felt being taunted or led about, not having control, especially this one animal that jumped out of the pen that had a different disposition. The others maybe became more like pets, but this animal would never be a pet. This animal was just an animal that was controllable, but was never going to be friendly. So that's what I'm talking about. I think we need to use our physical experiences to be spiritually minded. Get spiritual lessons daily, maybe hourly. maybe even if we're having problems, maybe even more than hourly. Examine your life. See what you can draw from it spiritually and get a spiritual lesson from it. Something else that I've been dealing with, this is, I guess I call under the category of rambling, is compensate. For years, my body has been compensating for arthritis. I had an injury 30 years ago and broke my femur right above the knee. And for 30 years, my body has been compensating for that break in that leg. Well, finally, 30 years later, because of that break, the knee wore out prematurely. So I had it replaced. So compensating has been a big part of my life for 30 years. And it was compensating, before the surgery, my body was compensating and don't realize how weak something can be in my body because the rest of my body is making up for it. And then since surgery, I'm noticing that my body, and sometimes the therapist tells me I'm still compensating. Got to keep those hips straight or keep them level or something when I'm doing certain things. My body is still wanting to compensate for a leg, a knee, a femur, a hip that's not as strong as the other side. So I've been working hard and fighting for every degree of mobility. To return, those leg presses that I try to get to at Aspen are helpful, but probably nothing's this is stupid. Nothing has been as probably as helpful as the porch swing up at Betty and Carol's. I can push back on that porch swing and get my femur out far enough over that porch swing and do some pure torture to my right leg. But that has probably helped me more than anything. It doesn't put dents in the front of my shin or anything like I get when I do some of these similar things in therapy. It's pure torture to do it, but it's probably given me more mobility than I could ask for. The only thing is I can't envision myself in sub-degree temperatures this winter out there on that porch swing. I don't even know why that's emotional. Compensation. I only find it once in the Bible, or compensate. And it involves a neat story in Esther. It says, "Then Queen Esther answered and said, 'If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request.'" "For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss." That's the only time I find the word compensate in the New King James Version. Now, we remember the story of Esther, who Haman was the villain. And Haman is at this meal when she's asking this request. And he is going from cloud 9 to 6 feet under, you might say, right before his eyes when she's doing this because he doesn't realize she's a Jew. I know there's people that discriminate against Jews, but I think this is a message that she has here. She's telling the king that, you know, the Jewish people are important, and he would be much better off if the people are not annihilated, people are not sold into slavery. They'd been hauled off into captivity, but the Jewish people weren't considered slaves. They'd been hauled off in captivity many years, and kingdoms had changed, and Mordecai wasn't maybe as prominent as Esther, but she becomes queen because it's the Lord's will. I think this is telling us there's a value to all people, and especially there's a value to Jewish people because they were the ancestors of Christ. But anyway, she uses the word in the New King James that comes out, compensate for the king's loss, make up for, whatever, however, you know what compensate means. But I've been dealing with compensation, like I said, for 30 years since an injury when I turned that lawn tractor over on my femur. But this being spiritually minded made me think of a verse that's in this chapter, chapter 4 of Ephesians, and I'd like to read that this morning. I have some comments as I read it, so, you know, if you want to follow along, that's fine, so you know what's me and what's the passage. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherein you're called. Vocation is kind of like the invite from Jesus. Jesus gives us an invitation. He's called us. Worthy of the calling wherein you're called. So it's kind of like the invitation, the importance of being invited by Christ. With all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love. Forbearing, doesn't that have something to do with, and long-suffering, doesn't that have something to do with compensating one another and helping one another? Endeavoring to keep the unity of spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body, and one spirit, even as you're called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism. One God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. But to every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ. Read that again. But to every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ. He has really compensated for us. We are indebted to him because he carries us. You know, the footprint story, you know all about that, when there's only one set of tracks. But to every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of God. He carries us when we aren't able to carry our load. Wherefore he saith, when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts to men. Now that he ascended, what is it but that he also descended first into the lower parts of the earth? He died for our sins, was buried. He that descended is the same also that ascended up from above all heavens, that he might fill all things. And he gave some apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers, for the perfecting of the saints, for the working of the ministry. He's given us officers, he's given us talents and teachers so that we can compensate one another. We can make up when maybe someone is in lack of knowledge or lack of faith or is doing poorly. For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. Till we all come in the unity of the faith, to the knowledge of the Son of God, unto a perfect or a complete man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. That's what we deal with. That's what I'm headed back to tomorrow. I've had I've had a wonderful summer. Right after Memorial Day, I had my surgery. I'm looking forward to going back to work because I know that's what I got to do. It's what I want to do. But it's been beautiful to miss some of those people. You know what I mean. If you don't know what I mean, you are so blessed. I mean, the ugliness, the vulgarity, I'm going to talk more about that later, of very few people that I work with can just ruin the whole experience. I'm going back to a different job than what I did. I did my job the day before I left for surgery. I'm going back to a job where I can be by myself and do my work completely away from other people. Break time, I'll still be with them. I'll still be sociable. There'll be times I'll still do my old job for maybe a few minutes or half an hour, or an hour or something like that. But I'm going to do something that's a lot easier on an old man and get paid just as much for it. And so I took this job knowing that it was going to be better. And I don't know for sure whether I'm going to retire in 2 years. This may be so easy, I'll work 6 more years. I don't know. I'm looking either 62 or 66. I haven't decided what these, and hopefully I'll remember that when I get up, and these are the best of times, these are the worst of times. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to reread a little bit. Verse 14, that ye henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie and wait to deceive. But speaking the truth in love, may grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted or knit together, by that which every joint supplieth, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, maketh increase of the body into the edifying of itself in love. See why I'm feeling a kinness or a closeness to this passage. Because I realize the importance of having a good knee and a good body. This I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walked, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over into the lasciviousness to work all cleanness with greediness. But ye have not so learned Christ. If so be that ye have learned him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that ye put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. That's the end of the sentence. So I have a comment back here. I didn't know exactly where to throw it in, but it says that ye put off concerning the former conversation the old man. I heard one of the worst conversations. I mean, I'm used to vulgarity. I'm used to all kinds of things. But in front of complete strangers to come out with the vulgarity and the lewdness that this man did is unforgivable. Well, you know what I mean. We were in the emergency room of Mercy here, and there was only supposed to be 2 people in with Mom when she was in the emergency part at a time. And so I was out with Nikki and Maddie and Shay in the little waiting area there, and people were coming in. You know, we were sitting there because it was closer, but there are also patients, people coming in that wanted to go to emergency. Well, there was this good-sized man that came in and sat down 2 seats from me, and I don't know what was wrong with him. He was hyperventilating, is all I know, is because he's hyperventilating because he had this bag he kept blowing in. He seemed to look rather, you know, healthy, give or take. But he kept blowing in this bag. But he wasn't too busy blowing in this bag that he couldn't talk to people on his cell phone. What do you do when, this is something maybe we're having advice this afternoon from, I'm still learning, I don't have it all right here. What do you do? This man was so, this man was so lewd in his conversation that I didn't even want to respond and say anything to him or be, let him know I was repulsed by his conversation. I wanted the man to feel like I hadn't even heard what he said. I'm really more concerned that I was hoping my two older grandchildren had no clue what he was talking about. I knew exactly what he was talking about because I'm with the world that much that I know exactly what he was talking about. But for this man to be, normal voice, almost maybe as loud as I am now in a small setting, talking about a woman's attributes or her body, describing it to a friend of his on the phone, I thought was completely out of line. I was torn between really letting him have it or choosing to just completely ignore him. And I chose, as I said, I basically chose to just let him think that I wasn't giving him any satisfaction of any response whatsoever. We have a topic, and the elders, we like the overall topic, but we changed it as far as conversation and dress and so forth. We have a topic, maintaining our purity. We like the overall idea, but this maybe is an anti-point of the statement I just made, but we decided not to pick on women. The topic was suggesting that women are dressing provocatively or something, and we didn't go with that aspect of it. We liked the overall topic of it. I think the more on the topic is like maintaining our purity in a pornographic world, but we have come to the conclusion, I think the elders are agreeing with me on this, that basically it's come down, maybe we don't need to pick on the women or dress, that basically it's if somebody's offending you or somebody's bothering you, or like I'll use Audrey, Audrey's a model. So, if Audrey's wearing something that I feel is slipped so far up the side or such a plunging neckline or strapless or top, not, I won't say topless, but, if she's offending me so much by, I think it's to the point that, we don't need to dress it maybe congregationally, that we just need to, go to that person. And I would have to go to Audrey and say, Audrey, you're tempting me to want to go to bed with you or something like that. If that is what is driving you a little crazy, I mean, people, I got to this thought because of this man was describing his girlfriend's attributes or so forth. But, really gets me isn't people that got that guy, but I mean, a healthy body is probably something that turns me on more than anything. Someone that's very, very well, very fit, very buff or something is, I guess, the expression today, is what turns me on that I have to watch out for. It's not necessarily, it's not really the way they dress. It's a person could have clothes on clear up to here and still be very sexually attractive to me because they're very fit. Enough on that. You know what the lesson is. I think we do need to, hopefully they will, understand your concern if you approach it that way. If they're dressing that provocatively, that they will realize that, they need to help you out. But I think it's come to that we can't, you can beat a horse only so long, and I'm over, so I will close. I'm closing with, thought I heard at the fair yesterday from a judge that was across judging cattle on the other side. I was interested in that show, but I was more interested in the show on my side. But I heard him close out the show when he named the grand champion. He said, these are the best of times, these are the worst of times. And I kind of got to agree with him. I didn't realize, I know my feed bills are tremendously high. I didn't realize that they were as bad as what he said they were. He said his feed expenses were three times what they were last year. And I just know that I have tremendous bills every month for my cattle, and I buy everything, and it's terribly expensive. So these are the best of times, and they're the worst of times. They're the worst of times financially for us. I mean, we're probably not getting raises. I know we're not getting, my raise doesn't cover the cost of what gasoline's done, and it doesn't cost the feed, and my cattle, when I sell them, they're not that much more profitable. But basically his answer was, he said, if you've got the answer to this thing, I'll give you my phone number. Please call me and tell me. I don't know what's going to happen in the next future. It's going to weed a lot of farmers, a lot of cattlemen out because they can't afford it. And I guess basically my answer to you, or my advice to you today, is that it's the same thing. You know, it's going to tough times. This is great times because we have each other. We have the love of Christ. But it's also the worst of times because temptation is worse. We live in a pornographic world. We live in some of the worst of times. Financially, many of us may be hurting. So it's time that, I can't say that you have to be the best cattle. We have to raise the best cattle. But maybe you have to be the best you can be. So be spiritually minded and, resist Satan as much as you possibly can. We offer the gospel invitation this morning. Thank you for putting up with me. And stand as we sing the song. Whatever we can do for you, please come forward.